It's not like you have been here for a very long time in Parliament.
Thank you for the compliment.
Okay, thank you, man. Good morning, Hydrographic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Brought a very complicated word to Parliament. I was waking up in the morning, I had to read this type of, to understand what is it that you want us to do. Okay. Meinir, how are you?
We're combat ready, sir.
How many interviews did you combat from today? You must be hating me. We are going to go for the acceptance or what, a motion of desirability around this one today. So that you, then it means that we finish with it. Yeah. So mostly what I would want to check is that did members go through and do they have questions? And if you don't have questions, then we'll go into the motion. But I wanted to start with the department to check if there's anything that they want us to alert us again about. Is there anything?
Honorable Chair, thank you very much.
Good morning to everybody. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I thought on the basis of the presentation that we did last week, that I thought it would be wise perhaps to bring some of the products that we actually produce on behalf of South Africa. And I have a number of charts here that have been produced in accordance with the IHO standards. I specifically also brought one from Durban, and I will leave that behind so that the Honourable Member can navigate her way through the streets of Durban as well. I also brought with me some of the publications that we produce, one of them being the South African timetable, which is in fact, it predicts the tide for all the major ports of South Africa, which is of course extremely important also for any development that's going to take place in South Africa. I thought just to give an insight and then what's more important, perhaps the catalogue of the all the products that we actually deliver, and I will leave them behind just to give you an idea of the things that we actually do under the banner of the South African Navy, but certainly the South African government, but in conjunction with the International Hydrographic Organization. And you will see that on all these charts that the International Hydrographic Organization badge is also printed, giving an international status, and therefore it is to be used by international mariners on the coast of South Africa.
That's right. And we are very thankful to your kindness. And I hope, I mean, the lady from Natal will find it very... She stays in Uganda, so I don't know how she's going to make it towards that direction. There's no ship going towards that area. But she has also got a friend here, Honorable Ndlovu. They're both from Natal. So you are helping me, guiding them how to navigate and use that hydrographic information to understand Natal. But thank you very much. And Meinir also will be able to make use of some of the information that they've delivered. I know he's not a Cape Townian, he's between some rural area and Cape Town. We'll be able to give him the information. Let me come back to you, Honorable Members. Is there any one of you who have got a question of clarity? And my secretary was just making me aware that you can't amend. You just have to go along. But I wanted to find out, is there anything? If I just go on like a small dictator, it's going to create problems. But if you don't have anything, which will be a very big surprise, my niece, that you in this world of South Africa have got no question. I'm telling you, that will be a very big surprise. You see. Yes, I understand. You must get members. Go and get members. You see. They must come. Do you have anything, Mrs. Nabadjah? It's on page?
Is this on the memorandum?
So it's B what?
B-1.
Okay. B-1?
Yes.
Yes, the member, it's called Protocol of
Protocol
Amendment.
Protocol of Amendment, yes. I know, you said
we are not amending, but
I'm just going to check it.
What have amended before in the system. You know, I just need...
Can you just use the mic?
I just need a little bit of education from the lawyers, because I think there are about 12 of such statements. Yeah, 12 or 14 or 17. Where on the second paragraph, number one, this is merely an additional improvement with no implication on the Republic of South Africa as a member state. You'll find this with no implication right through. I just want to know, what does it say? What does it mean? Why sing out South Africa with no implication to them? With other member states, are they having implications on this?
Okay.
What is the importance of this? Thank you.
And I know that there's a dollar calculation somewhere in the document. If you say that it doesn't have any implication, what does that dollar stand for then? Did you see? I'm just trying to find the page where the dollar is. Because I was reading it and I was like, 5 3? Okay. Yeah. Some financial implications. You see that on some page 3. Now, if you say there is no implication for South Africa, but in the pages before, you've got a financial implication. How does that relate? The Republic of South Africa annual financial responsibilities amounts to budgeted for in SAR by South African Navy Hydrographic Office, and is calculated as follows. And then in the statement then that follows, you say it doesn't have implications. What do you mean? Why that seems like a contradiction? I think that's a point of clarity that would make us happier.
Should I respond?
You know the hierarchy there.
Sir, thank you very much for the question. Page 3, paragraph 11 speaks of financial implications. And these are the financial implications that we have presently, and we have had since we joined the International Hydrographic Organization. The changes to the convention, or the improvements to the convention, does not have an additional financial implication. Therefore, our financial implication remains exactly the same as it has been for some time. May I just once again reiterate that it can only change if the South African ship registers more ship tonnage, then the financial implication would increase. But there is no additional burden on the budget of the South African Navy due to the proposed changes to the convention.
I must say that sounds a little bit difficult to understand. As you go on with your objective, as you are saying that scientifically this is helping South Africa, you see. And I'm just saying that the world is not on spending. I mean, you are saying that you are going to get more interconnected internationally with all other bodies. Then how does it not increase your cost if you are going to be more and more, you see? To promote, if you go to B2, number 3, Article 2 of the Convention of Amendment, it is to promote the use of hydrographs for the safety of navigation and all other marine purposes, and to raise global awareness of the importance of hydrographs. I mean, that's a cost. You see, you are dealing with SADC, and you had implied to us that you had to help Mozambique, and I mean, if you are going to grow more and more into SADC, do you mean that they do have the capacity to meet your needs? So I'm just trying to find that your objective seems to have to carry some cost. And you say it will remain like this. You see. Now, you know by law, if we pass it and it remains like this, and tomorrow you start scraping around looking for money, is it not going to put you in a compromised position? What do you mean that the body itself, will it ever come back and assist you to build SADC's capacity? you must understand, we, as a country, the way we relate to SADC, we understand we don't want to be this big brother, but we are also realistic with SADC that sometimes some of these opportunities, they don't pay for them because they don't have capacity in relation to dealing with this particular matter. So we don't want the Navy to find itself in a compromised position, because it looks as if the moment you join this body, to improve global hydrographic capabilities, capacity, training, science, and technique. That's what he says. That goes with money. It's not a question that somebody are going to beg and somebody will come to the table. So I'm just asking, like, is it realistic in the manner that we have given us that particular figure with no cost to that we'll ever confront the SANDF when it comes to it? Because you yourself were saying that you trained one person or two people in Mozambique. I mean, if there's another country that comes on board, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Or is the body itself going to pay this type of cost when they take place? I'm just getting inquisitive, you see, so that we don't, as she says, you are saying that it doesn't have implications for South Africa. But if you look at the objectives, or you then realize that there are things that are going to carry some training, and training doesn't go on the basis of you smiling to me, you have to put in money to train me. How does that occur? Is it just going to be a smooth road? Because you see, I mean, I know one member asked last week a question that says, how are you going to assist, you know, in assisting in transformation, bringing in young other, I mean, people into this particular program? And it's a rare skill, and rare skills, you need to pay for them. We should not take undermining it. So I'm just broad. Make us to relax so that we don't pass a law that is going to cripple you over some time. And in the department, you find that you start complaining, you know, and then we find you marching towards union building, demanding that we must pay for the hydrographic, you see. They will march towards union building, demanding some money from the I'm joking on that one. But give us some sense so that we can relax. You know, we should not be seen to have come to prejudge you or to close you out your development. You see. I know you would want us to agree with you, but just make us also happier. Fine.
Absolutely, Honorable Chair. Can I try and explain it in the following manner?
Okay.
There are three issues as far as I'm concerned. The first issue is the issue that there is an international hydrographic convention. The changes that are proposed here are the changes to the international hydrographic convention, and then the related issue to that is the issue that we, South Africa, is a member state of the International Hydrographic Organization, and we have ratified the International Hydrographic Convention. There are now certain changes proposed. The changes that are proposed is in order to make the International Hydrographic Organization more efficient. At present, it is a very convoluted organization with many subcommittees, requiring a lot of financing due to the having to attend all the various committees. But in terms of this convention, or the changes to the convention, it will really rationalize the efforts of the International Hydrographic Convention. On behalf of the state, the South African Navy pays its membership fee to this organization. That is based on tonnage, etc. Having said that, this change to the convention per se does not mean that our contribution to the hydrographic organization is going to change. In terms of the second issue being the funding of our hydrographic efforts in South Africa, that remains as it is. As I explained last time, that the South African Navy's hydrographic service is one of the 13 Category 1. We are at the level where we want to be. We have the coverage we want to be. We will maintain that over time, and we are not asking for an increase in funding with respect to the hydrographic budget of the South African Navy. The third issue is the issue of assistance to countries to the north of us within SADC, but also within the Regional Hydrographic Commission. We have allocated, with the permission of Treasury and the Minister, 0.05% of our budget to aid to countries to the north of us. That includes the work that we are doing in terms of hydrographic surveying. We believe that that is not going to change. What we do believe is that the efficiencies caused by the changes to the International Hydrographic Convention is going to make it more possible for us to approach donor funding in order to assist, for example, Mozambique. Mozambique at the moment gets aid from Norway. Norway provides a certain amount of aid in terms of hydrographic surveying. In Namibia, Brazil provides it. But that needs to be coordinated. And we believe by creating the regional hydrographic commissions and giving them more power, which is what is set out to be doing here, we believe that there will be more funding being able to be expended more efficiently in terms of providing a regional hydrographic service. And us just, we're not Big Brother. We believe we have a certain mandate through the Regional Hydrographic Commission, but certainly we are accepted that we represent these countries internationally, and therefore we are able to put their cause on the international agenda for assistance. So on the one side, we do not believe that the money towards our membership is going to increase. Neither is the money for the hydrographic survey and hydrographic office going to increase. And the 0.05% of our budget that we spend towards aid is not going to change. It's just going to be able for us to use this money more efficiently with other countries coming to the table.
What's the menu? You have to handle it? And Mr. Gabbard,
look.
I'll cover it. Mr.
Chair, thank you, and thanks for the explanation. But as the chair did really put a lot of flesh in my question, which I'm so grateful. I read this, I had enough time when I read it. And each time they say with no implication on the Republic, that's sort of things said before that, and then with no implications. I know we don't have time, but we need to pay serious attention to what has been said above before concluding with no implications. I had enough time to read this. Otherwise, we will have a problem of hands shooting up and shooting up, and we can't explain, because it's a bit sensitive, some of the things. But not that they are not doable. It's just that we didn't have time to really explain these things together. I had time to do so, to read. But through you, Chair, also on page B/16, I think it was 19, it's paragraph 19, the last paragraph on paragraph 19. I will request that we unpack that, which starts with this procedure amendment broadens the membership of the convention to da-da-da-da-da. The whole of that paragraph, it does create an uncertainty when you are reading it. So I request that, can you say something that will make some of us feel comfortable? Because as you are saying, some are not members of the United Nations, but it does not. In real practicality, will it be as smooth as the paragraph is putting it? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, come in for a minute.
I would just be interested as to whether any sort of analysis has been made of expenditure patterns in the region. My hypothesis would be that the total amount spent by the IHO in terms of straight transfer payments and also aid would probably exceed the total revenue raised in the region. I wonder if you could comment on whether my hypothesis is broadly correct or incorrect?
You see, you must understand we have an obligation also to look at the morale of the soldier. And morale goes with resources. So if as Parliament we have not interrogated it as much as it might affect us, you see, because tomorrow if there's anything that ever happens to you and you get demoralized and you leave the service, because it's a rare skill, you see, it's going to affect us, you see, that we have not looked after the institution in a manner that could make this institution to grow and to be continuous, to have capacity to be able to do its work. So I'm very glad that members are posing those questions so that tomorrow whatever happens inside the service itself or the defense, and you get demoralized because there's no resources to meet the targets that you have set, we should be clear in our mind that we won't feel guilty as Parliament that we have not been able to maintain and do our duty. But those are constitutional obligations that are confronting us, that we have to clear our mind that we had asked you those questions and you made us convince us that we should not panic at all. I see there's a lot about Monaco. Can you just explain to me what it is so that I can have a sense? Because you see, also in the document, you do raise the fact that it seems as if this organization, you using a big English word, convalence, but it seems as if it's not properly organized, you see. It keeps on growing over some time. Give us a sense. And link it up to what does this amendment mean for you? Will it be able to build within the defense itself your own capacity to be able to meet some of the ambitious plans you are beginning to have around this particular institution?
Honorable Chair, if I can say the following, that in 1995, the South African Navy realized that unless a country is a member state of the International Hydrographic Organization, it cannot belong or participate in the activities of the International Hydrographic Organization. Now, to us, that was a shortcoming, because as we showed the map of Africa, we indicated last time that there were very few countries who actually belonged to the IHO, and therefore they could not participate. On our own bat, we created at that time the Southern African and Indian Ocean Islands Hydrographic Commission, which was not linked to the International Hydrographic Organization, because we felt that hydrography doesn't end at the borders of South Africa. We felt that there was a responsibility. We therefore created this commission, and all the countries in SADC that weren't member states of the International Hydrographic Organization joined our Hydrographic Commission. Subsequently, the International Hydrographic Organization understood our agenda, and they then agreed that our Hydrographic Regional Commission, could be given recognition by the IHO, even though it consisted of many nations that did not belong. It then became an official regional hydrographic commission of the IHO. In terms of the aid being received by these countries, and the fact that we are moving them towards becoming members of the IHO, and if I can go to the Honourable Member, Mr. Mania's question, I believe that I don't have facts here with me, but if we look at the aid being received through the Regional Hydrographic Commission at the moment to countries who are not part of the IHO as yet, then it exceeds the membership fee by far. So I think your hypothesis is quite correct, sir. In terms of the fact that we are, however, we want countries like Mozambique, we want countries like Namibia, Angola, etc., to belong to the Hydrographic Organization. and therefore the paragraph on B15, a state that's not a member of the United Nations may only accede to this convention by applying to the depository and by having its application approved by 2/3 of the member states. This was brought in so that nobody can feel itself excluded. It can apply, and it will be ratified by the AHO, even though you are not a member of the United Nations. I think I'm not sure, ma'am, if I've answered your question. And if I can ask you respectfully, if you could possibly just refer me again to the right paragraph.
It's paragraph 19, the last paragraph in paragraph
19.
B. If mine is written B15, page B15.
It says B, it's article 21 of the convention was amended to read as follows. 20. Is that the one, proposal?
Article 10. Article 10.
Okay.
And then it goes down to the towards the conclusion of the
I can see. This convention shall be open for accession by any state that is a member of the United Nations. The convention shall enter into force for such a state on the date on which it has deposited its instrument of accession. That's B14. We said the Babundo. We found it doesn't go to Nantan. Yeah. It goes on to B15.
I think,
before you answer, if I can just, I also want you to take B1. I also want you to, in what Menir has raised earlier. Menir, is your thing on?
It's on.
It's quite bad, man. You see, considering that's what B1 says, considering that the vision of the International Hydrographic Organization is to be authoritative worldwide hydrographic body which actively engages all coastal and interstate states to advance maritime safety and efficiency and which supports the protection and sustainability use of the marine environment. Do you still stick to your word that says you would have capacity to maintain this vision?
Absolutely.
Can I raise my own experiences with you? Because you see, the FNDF helps with a lot of foreign, in our own foreign policy. And this is what it's going to do. It's going to have that capacity. And I do also know that the FNDF has MOUs that it doesn't honor. And it remains very inconsistent. It doesn't even put capacity to those MOUs. Ministers go and they meet these countries and they come back and nobody talks to these MOUs. And I'm saying we will give you this mandate, but do you think within the FNDF you'd have the capacity to sustain this particular position? Make us comfortable. I'm telling you that we are dealing with the morale and we need good morning, honorable members. We understand we're discussing very complicated issues. But feel comfortable. We will take you on board when we. But thanks for coming to our committee. Thank you. So, do you think, you see, also what goes along with this approach is what is called the African Renaissance, dealing with the African continent. Do you still think that your own capacity should stand where it is, your financial capacity? Do you think your resources will be able to do it? Look, we know your organization, we know the FNDF. I'm talking about the MOUs. I know that they don't honor them. They lie like they are sick like this in the office there. But the said gap goes all over Africa and comes back with those MOUs and pack them in the office. He thinks it's part of his package of making his office looking very nice. But do you think with this board is a very important development. Mm-hmm. It's a very important board that they are putting together. And I'm saying to you, the chair that she's the chair of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, and one of our constitutional obligations is to deal with the morale of the soldiers. And morale of the soldier goes along with the resources, you see. So she doesn't want to have a comeback tomorrow that where we have agreed on the hydrographic body. And the next thing, you will start walking out of the service, you see. You say that, no, the defense force in South Africa is not being taken serious, and you leave us, you see. And this is what people are doing in the Air Force. I'm so combined with those type of experiences. Do you think we are doing a good favor by endorsing this thing with the type of financial capacity that they have presented to us? But I don't want Mayneer to come back here tomorrow with 20 questions of saying that how do we demoralize soldiers? And he's very good at that, you see. And it's his job as an opposition party to do that. He's very good at that. Now, you must make us comfortable that what we are endorsing here is not going to have a comeback to us. Can I just check, Mayneer, did you want to ask a question or...
I just wanted to perhaps make a comment. Chairman, you need to be careful not to put the Admiral in an awkward position.
I mean,
he is responsible for military policy, and some of your questions are directed towards defense policy, which should be dealt with properly by the Minister.
You see, I told you. He's now putting in a cap as a difference. You know, he's the soldier here. I'm dealing with policy, whatever type of policy you are talking about. Mayneer, my job is just to throw the question. Okay, and that gentleman on the other side, if he wants to help, he must help you. I see him very quiet and playing with his computer today. Make us comfortable, sir.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. And if I may, with respect, and I say this with great respect, say to you, I'm honored to be able to answer these questions to the best of my ability. And I recognize, obviously, the importance and your responsibility to me as a taxpayer of this country as well. But may I also, and I say this with great respect, we have Mr. Mayneer's number on our system, and we are planning a call-up. Because we are short of submarines.
Please do that. Do that. He's giving me too many good problems here. Yeah, no. You see? You are going back. Very good. That's where you go.
See, I see that when the plan with the speaker fails, there's a different plan to get rid of me.
Even the withdrawal doesn't work, Mayneer. I'm getting you to be called back to the Navy. So be careful, Mayneer. I told you. I'm slowly getting a way of dealing with you properly. You see?
I apologize.
No, that's fine.
So we participated, as the South African Navy, we participated in drafting these changes to the convention because we honestly, honestly believe that this is going to improve the working of the International Hydrographic Organization. We believe it will become more efficient. We believe that the importance of the regional hydrographic commissions will be strengthened, which will in fact assist us in ensuring that hydrography is really improved on our continent. I might just say that I don't believe that the present hydrographer, Captain Alvin Kampfer, who was recognized a couple of months ago with the Dalrymple Award for regional hydrographic improvements in Africa, that he would not have received that award if he didn't do what he was supposed to do, and that is improve hydrography on our continent. And if that was not recognized worldwide. May I also just indicate that during the years that we've belonged to the International Hydrographic Organization, we have on numerous occasions chaired several of the subcommittees. We've had a director in the International Hydrographic Bureau, and we are certainly recognized as being one of the main players within the Hydrographic Organization. I may just tell you a short story. These are paper charts in front of me. They are still obligated by law to be carried by all vessels, but these days they are overtaken by events such as electronic charts.
Internet.
Excuse me?
Sir? Internet.
Internationally. In accordance with certain standards and formats. In about 1996, there was a big argument regarding the format of these electronic navigational charts. America came to this one wind meeting. I was at this meeting. And as the case is with Americans, they normally come with lawyers, engineers, State Department officials, etc. And they wanted a specific format, and the rest of the world wanted another format called SB57. The Americans then stated after the end of the argument, they said, if South Africa can decipher this magnetic disk of SB57 data, we as America will agree to SB57 being the international standard. We came back from that meeting. We got the CSIR and IMT and everybody together. We deciphered this tape. We printed a chart from this tape, and we took it back to the next meeting, and America said, seeing that South Africa can decipher this SB57 data, the world will now accept SB57. That is the influence that your hydrographic service has internationally. Within the region, I can tell you Captain Aubrey Comfort is not here this morning because he's flying at the moment to Reunion, where we have European countries sitting with our friends from Africa in deliberating on how we're going to improve regional work in terms of this convention. I am therefore saying to you that as the South African Navy has participated in the drafting of these changes, we believe that we will benefit. We believe we will benefit by the International Hydrographic Organization becoming more efficient, effective, and by decentralizing some of those powers down to the regional hydrographic commissions, of which we believe we play a very, very central role. Obviously, why should you believe me? Why should you believe me? I think it's the question. And the question is, I think that our record, the South African record in terms of hydrographic services being produced, here are some of them, stands above everything else. Our record speaks. It's not dependent on some dusty MOU. It is real work being done. I also explained perhaps last time that in terms of our capital acquisition master plan, we will, by the year 2012, have a mobile hydrographic survey system that we will be able to deploy in the middle of Africa to some of the Great Lakes, where there's still quite a lot of work that needs to be done. That's part of our planning, part of our strategic planning. It is funded in terms of the long term. I think our intentions are very clear to honor every single bit of this convention, sir.
So are you saying to me, I must so much trust you that, you know, I stay in Blobeck. So I've seen a ship next to my place there. How did it arrive there? Did it use navigation? Or it just got lost?
I can answer that, honorable member. The ship was anchored in Table Bay, and it has been the case for centuries, but if you anchor in Table Bay over winter, that you are at peril due to the northwest storms, and if you are working on your engines and your engines are down at that time and you start dragging your anchor, the northwest will put you on the beach at Blobeck and Milnerton. Fact of life, it will happen. It has happened in the past. It will happen again. What is of concern is that I'm not convinced that they asked for aid quick enough because there were sufficient tugs in the harbor. Perhaps they should have advised the port control that there was a serious problem, and perhaps then we wouldn't have sat with this wreck on our coast, sir.
Lastly, can I rely on the skill of Mayor to go and save me in that situation? Does he have skills? Look, I don't want Mayor to be recalled and find that he's going to bring ships back to Blobeck. Yeah. Is there any other person who's got a question? You want to say something, sir? I'm fine. Okay, let me help you.
Chair, thank you. I'll just present them for the last time.
Fine.
On this thing, I'm not paid. B10.
Yes, that's page.
Mine is not paid. They're just B10. The paragraph at the beginning that starts with this amendment operationalizes. You see that paragraph?
Yes, this amendment operationalizes the secretariat of the new administrative organ.
Then there is a sentence that says, it is unlikely that the South African Navy, then it continues and continues. Mm. I've got fear with statements like this, it is unlikely.
Mm.
When it comes likely, what do we do?
Okay.
It is unlikely. Let us be explicit about this thing. If it is likely, then what? That's my one. My two is on B12, page B12.
Yeah.
Through you, Chair, it would be nice, maybe necessarily not today, but you know we're not here.
Mm.
When the Vienna Convention was spoken about and decisions were taken about the Vienna Convention. So I might think it's proper for us to amend this and to accept this, but we are excluded knowledge-wise about what is this convention of 1986 was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Correctly, as we have said, we are interested also in the wellness of our soldiers. That are through you, I'll request that even in two sentences, just the knowledge about this Vienna Convention. Then the last one is, last week, we spent a lot of, some amount of time talking about awareness.
Mm.
And then on B2, Article 1 of the convention was amended to read as follows, and it goes until it comes to an end under G.
Mm.
What we are concerned about is the awareness of the existence of such a field to all our proper South African. But if we amend, we will still be ending in G. That thing is not being captured. I'm not saying it should have been captured in this document, because this document was before it came to us. But we can make a mistake if we can leave that out, because that's the craft of our discussion last week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are you there, my brother?
Honourable Chair, if I can answer the first question relating to page B10, this amendment operationalizes the Secretariat as the new administrative organ of the IHO and prescribes its composition and function. Presently in, and it links to the question you asked earlier on in terms of Monaco. In 1921, the Prince of Monaco made available the premises on which the International Hydrographic Organization has its secretariat. The secretariat is presently called the International Hydrographic Bureau. In perpetuity, therefore, the Prince of Monaco agreed to make this premise available and to support hydrography into the future. The IHB is staffed by a number of permanent employees, including directors. The chances that the South African Navy hydrographer would be seconded by the South African Navy if elected, because it's an elected position to be a director, within his present term is very remote, because of the shortage of hydrographic surveyors, etc., etc., etc. We have had a director there before, and what normally happens that the directors of the International Hydrographic Bureau sitting in Monaco are normally ex or retired hydrographers. One of our previous people in this country, one of the people from this country, Mr. Neil Guy, was nominated by this government to represent South Africa, and he was elected to become a director, and he was seconded. But it does not happen very often because it's a very, very small permanent staff of people at the International Hydrographic Bureau. And therefore the chances are very remote that this will happen. The second question about the Vienna treaty, I'm going to ask our lawyer, Mr. Skalk McDooling, if I may, Mr. Chair, to respond to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question was, I must just give clarity on the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, 1986, which is currently the benchmark, the international benchmark for the signing of all international agreements, which includes conventions and which South Africa or the South African government has signed. The article deals with the entire territory of the member states. It means that you some countries do have overseas territories, for instance, but it deals with the jurisdictional or the constitutional jurisdiction of that particular country. So it's the entire geographical entity of the member states. So it's just a procedural. And it deals with international legal personality or the International Hydrographic Organization as one of the subjects of the international law, like a member state, a country, autonomous country. It means nothing more than that. It covers the whole territorial integrity of South Africa.
You've answered all the questions?
No. If I may, Honourable Chair, just the third question. This is the changes to the International Hydrographic Convention. I already, on the grounds of the inputs received last week, understood that there may have been a shortcoming on our side, that we have not promoted and made the people of South Africa aware of the existence of hydrography as a discipline, and as to the services that are provided, the responsibilities attached to it, the benefits attached to that. And we have already debated on how we as a South African Navy, being the responsible entity with the mandate for this, will go about in the future to improve the situation in our country so that more people become aware of hydrography as a discipline, as a science, and as a responsibility which we have in South Africa. So I accept the notion that we perhaps have not done sufficient to promote hydrography within our country.
Okay. Are you happy, Honourable?
Yes, Chair, I'm happy with the explanation.
Okay.
But I was reading here. It's in back and
forth. Yeah.
It ends with G.
Okay.
How is this going to be in black and white, and when? Because if we stand next week and say we support this without that point being taken into consideration in writing, are we going to be doing justice to our own selves, to our own country? Thank you.
You want to respond to that?
We can certainly endeavor to take this back to the hydrographic organization and ask them to put in another clause, but I believe that this will delay the implementation. However, if I undertake to ensure that the business plan, the strategic business plan of the DOD slant SA Navy reflects what is being said here, and that I will personally ensure that this is captured in black and white in the DOD's mandate, not mandate, but strategic objectives. Would that suffice? Would my promise suffice today?
Yeah, it will suffice, but as you do those amendments and contributions, just inform us in Parliament, in writing, so that we could be able to hold you accountable also. If there's no other question, honorable, I'll just to then read the motion of desirability. I think this one will proceed.
No, I mean this one that you're talking about.
Yes.
Let me inform you.
Will that inform you before it has been submitted or what? In the DOD? That's what I want to know now. Before or after?
Yeah. That's with the process.
The contest that if it's informing after the thing is already done, then there is no point of doing it. It is informing before and so on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change what is the position.
What is natural?
Yes, but I'm talking about this second batch of the question. Is it informing before or after?
Are you? No, Tatu Mlangen, this one will proceed, will endorse it in parliament. And then whatever he's going to construct in that, you would have to come back before it gets adopted by your institution. So that members can be. You see, because it's very important and crucial for them. Because we didn't understand hydrographics until you introduced it last week. And it's an important skill. It's a rare skill. It has to be, South Africans has to be made aware. Yeah. Young and old. Okay, fine. No, he'll do it that won't go. Before he finalizes it inside there, he'll bring it to our attention. Okay. Can I read the motion of desirability? So that you can. That in the opinion of the committee, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the Protocol of Amendments of the International Hydrographic Organization Convention, the House in terms of Section 231, inverted commas 2 of the Constitution, approved the said agreement. Is there anyone seconding or moving that?
I will leave that.
Second. That's like your third edit, that is. You're the third one now. You're the first one, second, and then you're the third one now.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. I think we are finished on this one. Okay.
I see that this matter is up for discussion on Thursday in Parliament. Could you give some clarity? Are we going to debate this issue or speak to this issue? I see there's no time provided for it in Parliament.
Yeah. In the letter that is in front of me, it says Chairperson has been allocated 5 minutes to give an overview on this protocol in the chamber. And that privilege, I'm going to give it to my colleague, Ms. Mkabadele, to do it on behalf of the Portfolio Committee. That's what I have. I can still inquire if they want to do it properly. Will they give us more people?
No.
Fine. So they will only give it like this. So Ms. Mkabadele will represent the Portfolio Committee. It will take for a finish. On your part. Yes. And listen, with all the good work that you have given Ms. Mkabadele, the charts and everything, you show Parliament what does this thing mean, you know. We've given it over to her. She'll express your views. If you want to come and listen, arrange with them so that you sit up there and see how she's explaining all the things they've explained to us here today. But she'll be the one who'll be representing this Portfolio Committee in Parliament on Thursday for us to be able to get it to be processed through the National Assembly, and then it will go over to the National Council of Provinces. From the National Council of Provinces, it goes back to the President for its own adoption. Now, what's the time now?
10%.
The time now is 10%, honorable members. I really thank you also, members. But if you still want to be part of the Defense Committee, don't run away. You can remain around this house. Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm explaining that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, we're meeting again. We're meeting at 11 o'clock. You're calling here. Members, don't go too far. The minister might come earlier than that. Is the minister available, madam? At 11 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, we are having the minister here. We are finalizing part of the things we have promised South Africans that we are going to do on the convention.
I suggest you go deal with another dodgy one.
No, that letter from me.
I'm not here the minister, so I'm giving you the opportunity to do the presentation.
We're just waiting for the minister. It's coming now.
I don't know.
Huh? Not you. Open me. Yeah. To me. Do you have a list of the people that you brought along? Okay, come and put it here. Beggar and Panas. I was wearing a little one. I'm going to give me your list. Put the M, Ufunu Kumbega. Mbega la Pato. Put a stage up there. Can I put? Happy student up. You are Betila and instruments about. Move No, I'm sorry. No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. Palel. Man, that's in India, the stone wall. Put in the stone wall. Let it be an independent in front of your committee. We are good. Yeah, not coming again. Yeah, but it's not the one that you don't move. But I'm moving to ask you the vendor. What are you doing?
It actually is.
Good morning, honorable members. Again, I really want to apologize on behalf of the minister. We're supposed to have started at 11. But as I've been keeping on explaining that she did have a small consultation that she has to do in relation to this particular presentation. So we really want to apologize. Tatundu, we are really apologizing to you. David,
thanks.
We are really apologizing.
Thanks.
Yeah. The minister would try to do her best. She had expected that it's only members, you know. But the media like the defense committee too much. They keep on running after us. I know that they must understand they're making it very difficult for us, mainly for us to get close briefly. But the minister is here. She had, as part of her own process, she should be able to explain what she did announce what came out of the cabinet last week. So she give us a sense.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and again, I'm terribly sorry. We had a number of technicalities and legal matters to get through before I could come to yourself and make sure that we are at one with the Commander-in-Chief as well, so that we don't make pronouncements here that might not fit into the schedule. Last week we met with yourselves and I indicated to yourselves that from the time when I made the commitment in Parliament that I thought in view of some of the challenges we were experiencing in the defense environment, I had opted to look for an alternative to the dispensation we have, and I had indicated that we would be pursuing an independent and different dispensation for the military establishment. We have gone ahead and we've done that. We presented that to Cabinet on Wednesday and it was agreed to. The first step in this separate dispensation is the creation of a commission, whose details I will go into right now. That would assist both myself and the President in dealing with some of the issues that we raised in the speech, which deals with how are we going to be able to ensure that we create the kind of environment in the Defence Force where we are responsive to the environment that our soldiers live in, where we are also responsive to the fact that we have a skills shortage problem or a drain in our skills. At that point, I described the human resource base as the soft underbelly of defense, and we indicated that, like any other force around the world, we depend on people whose morale is very high, and therefore we needed to make sure that we kept this morale very high. And therefore, we were looking at various ways in which we can deal with some of our problems in a way that suits an environment such as our own, which did not exist in the country at that particular time. We indicated then that we were considering a dispensation similar to the intelligence dispensation because there is a precedent there and it has worked. And I said at that time that this is what I was proposing, and this is what I've then continued to propose both to the Minister of Public Service and Administration and to Cabinet. They've granted us this dispensation. Now, the reason why I wanted to consult with you is first to inform you of where we are. Secondly, to inform you of the commission that we have set up almost that will be set up almost immediately, but I had to do this in consultation with the President. And thirdly, to seek your support in the matter that we will have to deal with in the creation of a different dispensation, because it will require our understanding of what aspects of our laws we need to amend. Principally, we are looking at amending the Defence Act. I want to draw your attention to what it is that we are seeking very clearly. In 1994, the Public Service Act provided the Minister of Public Service and Administration considerable powers to establish norms, standards for the public service relating to various matters. These are set out in Section 3 of the Act, which provides the functions of the Minister and Executive Authority. The Minister is responsible for establishing norms and standards relating to the functions of the public service. In our case, we're hoping to read in respect of the Defence Service or Defence Force, the organization and structure of the establishment, the conditions of service and other employment practices for employees, labor relations within the Defence Force, health and wellness of employees, information management, etc., etc. What we're wanting to do is replicate what the Minister of Public Service has in regulating the public service and have those powers vested in the Minister of Defence in regulating all the aspects that deal with defence, so that we are indeed a defence force governed by those norms and regulations that pertain to the Defence Force. For a very long time, we have straddled between those aspects that pertain and are promulgated by the Public Service Commission and the Public Service Act and those that are promulgated in the Defence Act. So now we very clearly are going to make sure that the Defence Act regulates all those aspects that have to do with the Defence Act. These are the powers I've asked for. These are the powers that we have been requested to look into. The first thing we did do, though, was to request, as you will see as we go along, that this is a several phased step, maybe two phased issue. The first one is the establishment of this commission. This commission is provided for in the Minister of Public Service Act and the rights that she has in this way. The minister shall give effect to all of these things, making regulations, giving directives, whatever, by putting together a body that functions either to assist the minister in functions and procedures such as remuneration, if any, of its members, and any matter related to be regulated for the effective and efficient functioning of that particular service. So we are putting together this commission that will assist me in understanding the conditions of service, remuneration, if that is a matter, and any other of those matters that immediately form what we call the underbelly of the Defence Force, its human resource. We are hoping, together with the President, he has been looking at his program, that this commission might be established as early as Monday. The commission will consist of 10 people. It is within the power of the minister to appoint such a commission. I am hoping to get the president involved in this because it gives it the kind of status that I would like this body to have. In its first instance, it will take on the format that most members of parliament here know the Musaneke Commission acted within, very prescribed, very set terms of reference that looks at is the remuneration of members of parliament adequate, what are the other conditions that need to be attended to, and these recommendations will be made to myself, whereupon I would need to bring this matter back to yourselves to see how we can act on it expeditiously. The second step is the administrative step, which is the establishment of this particular body as a permanent part of our establishment. Now, the Department of Defense has been involved in extensive research to find out the format that such body could take in the defense establishment, and they've come up with various formats. They'll discuss this with yourself, perhaps at a workshop that you can arrange, chairperson, and we will work out the format that best suits us. We have precedence, which is the intelligence services environment. We could have a look at that. We could request the intelligence services to come and give us an outline of their own environment. We could have a look at the option that is presented to us by the defense establishment. I am informed that they did an extensive tour of 8 countries, looked at best practice, and I wanted to propose something of a similar nature to that. This, of course, will require the amendment of the Defense Act. I'm hoping that we can persuade Parliament. We had intended to amend the Defense Act. If we can persuade Parliament to bring this forward so that we can act with this matter as expeditiously as the situation requires, but also this requires your support. It requires your willingness to be able to ensure that we can push this through. Chairperson, I'm available for questions. This is the report I wanted to bring to yourselves on the matter that we put before Cabinet the day after we met with you.
Can we really thank the Minister for being able to keep to her word or being able to come back to us and present some of her own things? We were going to have a session tomorrow, Minister, where we are going to really debate the Constitutional Court judgment that came out in relation to this issue of union. As members of Parliament on our own, we are just going to brainstorm and look into what implication it has. Because we had said then that we wanted to see if we do have to start have some legislation to deal with that particular matter. But we are not going to go ahead with it. That particular discussion, given now that the ministry is making new proposals of how to approach the matter itself. So, members of parliament, this is what the ministry is suggesting to you. You are listening. And thanks for coming back, Mr. Kronewald, Honorable. I know you were under pressure, but I can see you take this work very serious. I really appreciate what you are doing to be up for our country. Can I give it over to you, Honorable Member, and you could make your thinking. Don't go into decision now. Just think through the issue. We'd have to arrange amongst ourselves the proper time where we'd have, again, with the bodies the ministry is putting forward to us to have a particular discussion so that we could at least help the ministry to get faster, to fast-track the matter itself. Can I start with the older one, Mayor? Babu Ndlovu, and then after that I'll come to you, Mayor. You can go on, Babu Ndlovu. I always think he's a young man, is that he doesn't want to watch his hair, but I mean, coronavirus has convinced me today that he is old. Babu Ndlovu.
Let me deal with the matter at hand at the moment. We're going to deal with that one afterwards. Thank you, Chairperson. Well, firstly, I must thank the Minister for briefing us. There are 3 points that I wanted to raise, Minister. You said that we have sat down with the Minister of Public Service and administration, then you have separated the your portfolios. Can you elaborate on that? Because that is very important, because we must understand what's the background of that and so on. So that when we debate about the issues of unionization and so on and so forth, we know exactly what we're talking about. That's the first one. Secondly, Minister, you said that you come up with a number 10, a number of people 10. Why 10? And who is that 10? If there is a possibility of asking who is that 10, if there is a possibility of thinking that, of saying that, if it's for a president, it's for the president, you may say that. That is for the president's prerogative, you can say that. Now, you said, Minister, that you want to do this like the Mosaneke, Judge Mosaneke's committee, deal with the matters just like Judge Mosaneke's committee. I must tell you, Minister, that as a member of parliament, we usually have a fight with Judge Mosaneke's committee every now and then, because it takes years to come to the conclusion. Won't this go to that same route? I'm afraid if we are talking, going to take it like that, will it just take the same route, that debating one and the same issues, going forward and backwards, and then we lost a lot of time. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll allow the minister to answer to each and every person who presents the question, so that she can be able to give good answers to everything. But it is a serious matter, and I want her to be quite at ease to deal with us, so that whatever we receive and whatever we take note, Mandy is also taking notes here as the secretary, so that means she would then give you the minutes of this particular presentation, so that you don't have to take notes in a hurried way. She would have to do it so that we can, after this, all of us reflect quite thoroughly around this particular development. Can I give the minister to answer Babu Ndlovu, and then I'll go to the next person.
I just want to read through the commitment that I gave through the budget speech. And I quote, I want to assure the Defence Force, because at this time I was speaking very directly to the issue. I want to assure the Defence Force staff that their conditions of service are a concern. We are seized with the matter. I would like to engage each one of them through the proper management structures to see how we can attend to these. We are acutely aware of whatever it goes on. Now, the only way we felt we could properly engage each one through the proper structures is by the establishment of this particular commission. The various structures are governed by military discipline, and I'm going to be led by the Defence Force, so that you don't have a commission wandering through the ranks and asking anybody they come across, but to ensure that every member of the Defence Force feels that they have been consulted. This is what the Mosaneke Commission did for us. The reason why it took so long, Honorable Ndlovu, is because you and I are so argumentative. Each time we were in consultation with the Mosaneke Commission, we fought to the last tooth. It was not because they were dragging their feet, it was because we engaged them thoroughly. I'm hoping that the terms of reference for this will be so defined that they will be given a time frame within which they will report, which will be no later than December. The Mosaneke Commission, I am not aware, was given the time frames that we are working against right now. The Mosaneke Commission was a commission established after due consideration of the fact that we needed to have a look at the conditions of service of serving members of parliament to see if indeed they meet the standards internationally accepted, and whether the members of parliament themselves were happy with their conditions, and that required extensive discussion. In fact, by the time that the Mosaneke Commission report was adopted by each one of us, we'd almost given up. But that has to do with the terms of reference. These terms of reference will be very clear. They will give a time frame, because we do not have all the time on our hands to ensure that the matters are addressed as speedily as possible. That's what we committed ourselves to do in July, and we are continuing to do just that. Why is it 10? We thought that the number 10 would is a kind of number that would deal with the matters. And in terms of what we had worked out in what we ourselves call the National Defense Force Commission, we'd categorize those areas that we want to deal with. We want to draw in people from the academic community. We want to draw in people from religious community. We want to draw in labor experts. We want to draw in people who have military experts. And we want to make sure that we can create a necessary balance of the demographics of our society and be sensitive to gender. The number 10 seems to me to cover most of those areas we want to cover. So that is how we arrived at it. The prerogative is mine, as given to me by legislation, but I had wanted to escalate it to the presidency. He has not quite yet given his, he has not quite taken on this responsibility, but finally the prerogative is mine. The first question was exactly what dispensation are we talking about? I was going to ask the chairperson here to arrange a workshop so that you see how the intelligence dispensation, which we are trying to follow, has worked. It has worked. It creates a precedent, and in law, it's very important to have a precedent because that's what most laws are based on. There is a precedent. It has worked. We've been working on that for some time. We can have a look at that precedent. We can look at some of the proposals that come from the defense environment themselves, because they have also been looking at this possibility for some time. So you look at the various possibilities that are put in front of us, and this will give us the necessary space to decide which one suits us best. The reason why we're taking on the responsibility of the responsibility is similar to that of the Public Service Administration is that is what the Minister of Public Service does for the public service. We are outside of the public service insofar as defense matters are concerned. So all those things that the Minister of Public Service and Administration would do for the public service, the Minister of Defense has to do for the defense environment. That is the one difference. So we are wanting to ensure that we can align ourselves and make sure we have all those powers to do all that which is necessary to be done. All right. Thank you.
Can I give over to you, David?
Thank you, Chair. I'm partially covered in my questions by the Minister's response to the Honourable Member next to me, but let me start by saying that I certainly welcome the Minister's announcement. We are certainly committed to working with the Minister to establish an alternative dispensation, and we stand ready to work round the clock if necessary to work on amendments to legislation. I really just have three questions. In respect of step one, you've talked about the number of commissioners, but could you perhaps just expand on the process that you will follow in order to appoint members of the commission in step one? And then coming to step two, where you want to establish the commission as a permanent commission, I mean, do you believe and do you have a legal advice that suggests that model will pass constitutional muster, given the fact that there's another precedent in the Defence Force where military unions have already been set up? That's the first part of the question. And the second is, you talked to the precedent correctly in the intelligence services. Has that precedent ever been challenged in the court or in the constitutional court? Those are really the three sharp questions that I have. Thank you.
Okay, bye. As I said, I take one person at a time and give the opportunity to Minister to respond. I'll come to you, Lotma. No, we make a man at that, please. Kasiya, the Minister, I'm sorry.
In relation to the first one, a minister has the right at any time to establish a commission. I am taking advice right now from the state law advisors about whether to go through the regulatory process or whether to simply appoint these people and in time make sure that by the time that the administrative framework is in place, then we go through the regulation. There is an urgency around this. if we go through the regulatory process, we have a time factor delay that we might be dealing with, because in terms of the Public Service Act 1994, the minister may by regulation establish one or two bodies consisting of prescribed employees or other persons, both of such employees or persons as serve as a consultative body to, or an advisory body to the minister. This also is in the Defence Act. So I could either go one way or the other, but I am inclined to go by way of appointing people through the necessary consultation with members of cabinet, and in that way it will be faster. But by the end of the day, I will have legal advice about how we can fast-track promulgating regulation to appoint, to ensure that these people are appointed properly. It also depends whether it is escalated to the level of the president or not. Number two, you are asking if the dispensation that we have asked for will pass muster, considering the fact that we already have a precedent of, yes, we've considered that quite carefully. We did say the last time we were here, we wanted to go back and study the judgments and see where we might have gone wrong. And if we feel very strongly that there could have been something we ourselves as the defense environment, as defense department could have done better, there is nothing stopping us going to the courts to say we erred in this and we should have done A, B, C, D. We ask you for condonement of ABCD, because for these reasons, we would like you to understand that we are requesting a different dispensation. There is precedent all around the world where this has been done. So we are still looking at the legislation, and we will come back on this matter, depending on whether the legislation itself, the ruling of the courts is binding. But I'm also hoping that members of the committee here, which is why I was hoping it was a closed committee and not a public with the media, is because it's more a consultative discussion than an announcement. Whether you think that is the way to go to the Constitutional Court and say, these are the challenges we're faced with. We're asking you please to consider this request, a condonation of some of the judgments that have gone by. But that is for you to discuss. We are also in discussions ourselves to look at this. It is a necessary matter that we have clarity on this, and the highest court that can give clarity would be the Constitutional Court. Has the precedent of the intelligence services ever been challenged? No. To the extent that I have knowledge, having steered it and established it, we had an extremely happy dispensation. Of late, I'm informed that perhaps we need to change with the times and allow a little more bargaining within the intelligence community. But it was one that was promulgated through an amendment of the Intelligence Act and through provision of the necessary regulations and thorough consultation with the intelligence community. They were extremely happy about it. The upside is that there was very clear discipline, very clear command and control. They knew where to report to, knew where the directives came from, and there were no gray areas such as we are experiencing here in the Defence Force, where we're never quite sure which takes precedence, the Defence Act or the Public Service Act, where in fact we are outside of the Labour Relations Act by the very nature of the work that we do. So no, there has been no challenge to the Intelligence Services Act. Regulations, it's been in place since 2002. Right up to now, we have this situation, and I would like to think that it's a happy precedent. I'm not sure. But you will have the benefit of hearing from them in your workshop. Thanks.
Can I give you your name? You.
Yeah, Minister. Is it your intention that this commission, if it does become permanent, replaces military unions? Secondly, do I understand you correctly to say that this commission you expect to report to you on how military unions can be replaced? And thirdly, given that any decision that is taken is almost inevitably going to be challenged in court by the unions,
What is going to happen in the interim while that process goes ahead? I mean, to, in the sense of meeting the grievances that do exist in the military.
The reason why we're starting with an immediate commission is precisely so that we are able to understand the nature of what needs to be done urgently. So it's a two-phase thing. Ultimately, when we do find, when we've institutionalized this administration where the commission is a permanent commission, we will have worked out the various scenarios with yourself and in concurrence also with the defense force. We do not envisage that they will take the place of unions, but we envisage that they will be the ultimate arbiter to advise the minister of any salary increases and all of those matters. We envisage that within the defense force itself, we will have professional bodies where the military will be able to come together, lobby for better conditions, but certainly we would not like those to be trade unions. Trade unions are, by their very nature, political. We cannot escape from that. And when you introduce politics into the defense force, you're introducing a serious problem. Very clearly, in terms of both the Constitution and the law, before I deploy the defense force anyway, before the commander-in-chief deploys the defense force anyway, I have to consult Parliament. I may not just deploy them, but unions are a different structure that can deploy my soldiers without permission from anybody. When my right to deploy my men is prescribed by law, why would I want to give somebody else the right to deploy my soldiers out of their workplace without someone else by your leave? And I think that there is something fundamentally flawed in that kind of discipline service. Having this kind of command structures. So, what was the question? Did I answer it?
Largely. Just the last bit about, given the fact that any circumscribing of the powers of the unions is going to almost inevitably be challenged in court,
yes.
Will that be able to delay the process?
You know, as it stands here, and the Deputy Minister will bear me out, as it stands now, the unions that exist in the Defence Force have not met those requirements that are required by the Defence Force on a regular basis. So we recognize them purely by the goodness of our heart. On a regular basis, they are meant to give us audits of their membership, audits of a number of things that is prescribed by the regulations that we've set up. They have not met those. So to all intents and purposes, I could quite happily sit here and say I'm not aware that they exist. But unfortunately, one of them is registered, which is SANDU, because at the time that they registered, they met the threshold of 15,000. I'm not sure what their membership is now, whether it's still at 15,000. So they may go ahead. Of course, they will probably go ahead. But I am convinced that we have international experience on our side. There isn't a country that allows the kind of unions that we have in this country. No way. It allows some kind of formation where soldiers may come together to discuss and lobby for their own improvement of their conditions. I think they're called professional associations, yes. But if we find a country anywhere on the planet that allows this kind of union, then perhaps it can be taken to the Constitutional Court. But I don't think we are. I don't think they will find it in the heart of the South African public that we should go the way that we have gone. So we are very ready for any challenge that they will bring before us, and we will take it on. I'm hoping that we can have the support of the Portfolio Committee.
Yes. Now, I'll give you a one below. I know that we did express ourselves the last time the minister did the presentation around this thing of the union. That's why we were going to take a debate amongst ourselves, even take a relook at that constitutional judgment and use different opinions. And I think the minister even now is emphasizing that let's have that discussion amongst ourselves so that when we assist into doing the legislation, ourselves are certain that we are protected. Nobody will go back. I mean, none of us here want to be seen going against the Constitutional Court in a very easy way. But also, we do have the power as Parliament when we engage to see how do we improve that environment. But we seem to be in common that we should not unionize the defense in South Africa. That one we have expressed ourselves. So we're taking our strength from there to assist in this particular development. It's a very good development. Can I give you Mr. Kronovac?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to start to say I think it's the step in the right direction. We have to address the problems in the SANDF in a disciplinary environment. But I want to say, Chairperson, that I personally think that the success of this commission will lie in the appointment of the chairperson of that specific commission. And I know it's a prerogative of the minister. And I want to compare it with the Moseneke Commission. I think the problem, one of the problems of the Moseneke Commission is that Judge Moseneke, in fact, is on record where he said he doesn't think that MPs work very hard. So he didn't understand the work and the environment of members of parliament. So that whoever he or she is going to be, the chairperson will have to be a person who knows how the SANDF works, the environment in the military field, to ensure that it is a success. That's all I will ask the Honourable Minister. Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm actually open to suggestions from the committee about members of the commission. It's a very important commission for me, and it has very tight deadlines, so I will take any advice.
Can I give another veteran, David, before you? Is that the deal?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In fact, I welcome the report from the Minister, and I support the proposed commission. Chairperson, I would hope that that commission will not only meet the top management when it goes around the department, you know, the whole entire defense structure. Now, Chair, in my view, I would speak to the committee in particular. We are sitting here theorize without taking a practical steps. We as a committee ourselves. I would suggest that we should, as a committee, go out the entire structural department, if possible, to look into the conditions of our armed forces. That's very important. We must not only get the reports from, you know, top officials of the department sitting here. We must also give ourselves time to go down to see how our armed forces are living. Now, accommodation basis, salary basis, arms themselves, so the conditions. Entire conditions we must check. For instance, if we go to such steps, we will also be giving our armed forces a morale that they are supported by the committee, members of the committee, members of parliament. Experience is a teacher. In the past, we used to do that. We used to do that. We have to even go as far as where our armed forces are deployed for peacekeeping. We went to Burundi sometime. We went to DRC sometime. We went to Rwanda sometime, checking our forces. And they were happy to see us. They were happy to see us. But it's very, very important. So I'm speaking to the committee this, and I would hope that they do not contradict with the proposed commission. They do not contradict with the proposed commission. This is for the committee. We must go out to see right from down, not only on the top management, top officials, but we must see unfortunately from low level, rather than top.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Maine, can I give you? Okay.
Chair, I have one proposal and one question arising from the Honourable Groenewald's comment about the make-up and representation on the Commission. I'd like to ask the Minister if she would consider, after she has decided on her shortlist, whether she would be prepared to provide that shortlist to this committee for input and comment. Obviously, given the urgency of the matter, it would be incumbent on our committee to provide those comments in a very short period of time. But I wonder if the Minister would consider that proposal. That's the first, and notwithstanding, I understand that it's the Minister's prerogative to make the final decision and appoint the commissioners. The second is a question. I mean, we've dealt now with legal and administrative issues, but ultimately, when the commission reports and when we start to work on different models in step two of your process, we're going to come down to the very thorny issue of the management of our resources. I mean, the budget provides for roughly $32 billion this year, and it seems to me that you have several competing demands. We've got, a particular demand from within the Defence Force, but we have another demand from military veterans. So it seems that, our challenge is not just going to be legislative, administrative, but it will come down a discussion about finances and the management of our resources. The short question is, is the Minister or has the Minister considered some way of perhaps increasing the defence budget to provide for these contingencies?
The one thing that is going to be important for the portfolio committee to agree upon, if they want that type of transparency, it's how do we manage that information. But the difficulty with such occurrences is that you then say to a person that you know that, hey, I saw your name. And then the person sits there with an expectation that the minister is going to announce his name. And when the minister didn't, was just consulting, and then it ends up in the media and the person starts complaining when the minister is not appointing. So we should also consider that, you see. So we also demand transparency quite a lot most of the time. And so if we would want to be taken into confidence around such matters, it means we would have to be also confidential ourselves in how we deal with that environment. Not that we don't want the media, but it's because we want to help in this particular process. In relation to what Tatu Diale is raising, I think, and this is what part of our discussion should be, is that issue of now, it must be taken as a consultative process and suggestions that have been thrown out by the ministry, so that when you deal with the media, you don't go and express as finality some of the ideas that she's putting up here, you see. Because you see, the moment you put it as finality and you come in with a new idea, you then put the ministry against the newspapers and everybody that have read her statement. We should all be cautious in saying that it is a consultative process and she has introduced the new ideas. And ourselves as a team of parliamentarians are going to go and relook at what she has put up as a proposal. So that even in the media's mind, whatever they chance it gets out of this particular room, it goes out as suggestions that have been made to the ministry by us. I mean, she has given it to us so that she is not bound by what she has commented about here. That's why I'm saying that even in how we are going to debate the issue of unions related to this matter, it's really becoming that what do we think as a collective here and what does he think as a minister, so that when it comes to the end product, and then when that end product is in front of us, it then means that Udiale would all be committed to that particular collective decision and would assist each other to go to the soldiers and go and explain wherever they are, helping the ministry now to sell the idea that Jesus has put on in front of us and that we have agreed upon. I think that's where the committee will strengthen the ministry at the end of the day. That here is the collective, here is the decision, we support it as parliament. Let's go down to the basis. I would want to work that process out from our side in that particular way. That let's wait until the collective mind has finished the idea, and then we'll all go down out and sell it. The one challenge I just want to, as the other members going to also come, is the area of lack of skill. You know, I mean, I don't know how do we deal with it within this particular process. The ministry is going to deal with it. Well, you know, there is an issue of retention. I was reading the SAF, I mean, General Khakhiani's comments about lack of how people are beginning to live, the Air Force. Now, I'm saying that's one area that we have to reflect on and think about it, that how do we deal with that retention of skills? You see, I mean, we were dealing with hydrographic this morning, and it's a very rare skill also within the SANDF. And we were trying to throw around our own thinking that how do we maintain that particular skill so that it doesn't disappear in the SNDF when the older people are moving out. How do we assist into keeping that skill to be alive within the SNDF? These are some of the things that we need to be able to reflect and engage ourselves into, so that what the ministry has done, which is very positive and very helpful, is to engage us, and we should be able to help them during this particular process. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. After due consultation with my deputy and our legal advisors, we've come to this conclusion. We will meet on Monday or a day as close to Monday as possible. We will give you our list and give you the rationale why each one of them has been appointed. Should you have severe problems with any of them, we will engage with yourselves. We will move out of this room and make the announcement. So the committee will be consulted over the commission. Okay? And I request the chair to make such an arrangement possible. An amount of 2.3 million rands has been set aside for the work of the commission, because we will be providing them with a secretariat. So that will probably also add some kind of will make their work a little swifter. And by the time that we appoint them, the terms of reference will be before the committee here for the committee to have a look at and approve. We will take every step of the way with yourselves, and we are hoping that perhaps if we really push our luck, we might even by the end of the year have amended those aspects of the of the Defence Act that we had wanted to amend anyway. But most of what we're wanting to do it would be in regulations. We have that experience in intelligence, and we already have the go-ahead from Cabinet. So hopefully the worst part of our work is over. The question of how do we reprioritize our work in such a way that we are able to deal with those matters that are of immediate concern. I have an outstanding meeting with the Minister of Finance. Together with him, we're going to have a look at our budget. There is no certainty that it will increase at all, but we're going to see how we can restructure it to meet the most immediate needs, and perhaps work out over the longer term MTEF period those things that might be held back for another year or so. But he's going to give us his expert assistance to rejuggle our finances. The chairperson did talk about the aging fleet. The deputy minister here was was with the deputy president when they had the unfortunate landing in Badulite. So if you're interested, he'll give you a quick brief about that matter. But what he did do is to send the point home that unless we do something quite urgently about some of our serious challenges, we're going to put the risk of the most important clients, the lives of the most important clients at risk. So we have got cabinet approval to look at this matter, and we've also got cabinet approval for the minister to be a little nicer to us than he has been in terms of our budget, so that we can deal with the urgent issues that confront us. So we are making sure that we can rearrange ourselves and increase our capacity where it needs to be increased. But there is absolutely no guarantee that we're going to get a penny more than what we have. We're just going to have to reprioritize.
Yes. Definitely will give the deputy minister an opportunity to explain to us about the incident. I'll give 2 to 3 people, and then after that, we'll give to the deputy minister. I'm telling the minister. In consultation with the minister.
May I suggest that he does, because there's a lot of rumors out there which are incorrect.
Yeah.
If members of the committee have first-hand information, they're able to set the request straight.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. I know how the deputy minister. Dr. Mlange, you wanted to say something?
No. I thank you very much, Chairperson. I've been largely covered by some of the speakers here. But I just want to congratulate the minister. I think she's doing extremely very well.
Yes.
Very well indeed.
Yes.
Have no fears. We are on the right track. We're doing the right thing. We're doing the legal things. You're not behaving like those soldiers who went to the union illegally and did things they should not have done. You're following the law, and I'm only disappointed in one thing. The union which we established for the soldiers, it was never correct, and the trade union that we have established. I think we must find a way. We must find a way of. I don't want to use the word ban, like the National Party government used to ban things. We must find a way of getting rid of it, but making sure that the soldiers have a structure within the army itself which can take up their issues. That is very important. Have a structure within the army which can take up their issues.
Yeah.
But not a trade union like the one they have at the moment. I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
And with my limited knowledge of the army, of the defense force, I want to agree with you that I also don't know of any country where there's a trade union similar to the one we have here in South Africa in the defense force. I don't know of any country. So we have been very liberal in our constitution. And if it means amending some portions of the constitution to do away with the union, but making sure that there is a structure which speaks on behalf of the men and women in the cloth, in the army, we must make sure that there is one such. But otherwise, I think we are doing very well. Continue your good job.
Yeah.
You have our support.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mlangeni. I just want to assure you that the unions have nothing to do with myself. So while I appreciate you complimenting me, please dissociate me from the union. Babu Mlangeni says you're doing very well, everything legal except this.
If you have done something,
as though I want to dissociate myself from this completely. Babu Mlangeni, you are saying that you know whatever needs to be done. We have, in what we want to do ultimately in establishing a different dispensation, there are various options that we're looking at. We're looking at amending the Defense Act. There's another option of drafting a standalone legislation. There is an option of asking that the Public Service Act, Public Service Act be amended to include this. The final one could be the amendment of the Constitution. So that's where you might come in. All these options will be given to you at the workshop, and you'll have time to go through all of these possibilities and arrive at one that is the best for all of us.
Tata, I want to give you an opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Comrade Chairperson. Thanks very much, Minister. Truly speaking, we are behind you, Minister and Deputy Minister. You know, well, my question, Comrade Mlangeni, he touched another my question. You know, some of us, we are just looking at the newspaper or in the TV, practically outside, we don't even know some other country. But now my question, Minister, is like the same that Mlangen was saying. And this thing of a union in the army, in the other country on Africa or internationally, the army, they've got unions or they've got a right to strike. You know, I don't understand, because it's first time to see these kind of things. I was in Navy, just we and others, we can strike and do and so on and so on. But I didn't think the heart, because according to me, but not me alone, at the same time, it's a Christianity. You know, chapter 7, verse 1, Judges, say the army is a structure of God. You can go to read. It's, the army is a structure of God. If the army today is completely not right, I agree with you when you are saying politicize, which means somebody, if she or he politicized the army, you are against the God. Because the Bible says the army is a structure of God. Now, if these kind of things happen, painful, all of us, because it's going to affect all of us in South Africa. But now my question, I just want to know, Minister, some other countries, they've got also union in the army. And, you know, if there's a union in the army, maybe you can help us, because we don't know. Because, you know, they say elephants, when they fight them, and then the grass is going to suffer.
Mabundu.
No.
He's a member of
Parliament. No, he's an old man. The time is gone. You don't understand what I say. You know, I'm saying, you know, Madam Blanken, you'll understand. I'm saying, when this thing, here, there's a union in the army. You see, sometimes people, when they're striking, you will say some other union say, no, I'm not striking. Others say, who's going to strike? You see? Now I say, if this thing comes, and one day, the army starting to themselves to divide it, it's dangerous for South Africa. That's what I'm talking about really for. Well, you don't understand the old man. Now, according to Minister and Chairperson, I don't even support the union of army. As an individual, I don't support that, because I see it's very dangerous. If there is something wrong to the army, I agree with the point raised from that Mlangeni. Some structure and negotiate and call the minister and talk to the minister and so on and so on and so on. And so on. Not act. Union building is our heart. It's our secret. You know, people are talking about South African Army, United Nations, in Africa also. When there is a problem like a DRC, Burundi, and some other country in Africa, and the United Nations also, they look in South Africa, to South Africa help. Now, when this can happen, now, it's, I don't think it's right. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you, Babu Tolo. I think you are the last speaker on this one. I'll give the minister and conclude this matter, and then we'll give an opportunity to the deputy minister just to take us into what happened. Thank you, minister.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Somehow knew that Bishop Dolo would be the next speaker.
Oh.
Because you see, when Babu Mlangeni was saying that Wally agrees with everything I've done, what he doesn't agree with is the trade unions. What he was actually talking about was the president of Honorable Dolo.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
I understand.
Yes. So perhaps the Honorable Dolo can sit down with the president of his organization to understand how we arrived at this and read every charges to him about the army. Bishop Dolo. Are we at one on this matter?
Yeah, we are.
We are. Thank you. I completely agree with you, Bishop Dolo. There is one country in the world that has a trade union. I think it is Belgium. A country of advanced democracy. In Sweden, yes. Two countries of advanced democracy with the kind of trade unions that are there to ensure that they are within the discipline and parameters of what they're dealing with. The kind of trade unions we have in this country are completely different. But what most countries have opted for is what they call professional associations, which are those that lobby for whatever range of issues that concern them and their conditions of service. And I don't think that we would like to close our minds to that. We would be open to that. But I think that we are at one, and I completely agree with you. The notion that soldiers are workers, I believe, is wrong. If you think that it is a calling from God, I will go along with you. The army is a professional service given to the country. It's the highest sacrifice that anybody can give. These are not workers and should not be confused for workers. When we crafted the Labor Relations Act, we deliberately left out soldiers and intelligence officers for that particular reason. If at any time we have erred in not responding timeously to some of the legal challenges, we are now determined that we're going to look into this and reverse some of those things. But thank you very much for your support. And I didn't know that the army was an army of God, but I will inform my soldiers what you say. They might begin to mend their ways if they know that they have such a higher, that their calling is of a higher level than ourselves. Thank you very much.
Honorable members, we really want to thank the minister again. She has promised us last week that she'll come back to us, and today she's in front of us putting out ideas and things that she thinks we should be able to help into resolving the situation. She has said that in January, I mean when she had the budget vote, and now she's been consistent in doing that. We really have to thank her as Parliament, as an institution, that she is doing her work in a proper way. And the one thing that is very helpful, Babu Mlangeni, she has really stick to the law, and we really need to support her for that. You see, because, I mean, you know, people raise issues, but from what we know from Parliament is that she has stick to the law, and she's been able to come back to the institution and solicit some advice from the institution. Minister, we really want to thank you.
Thank you.
And we really accept your apology. We think you are doing a very good thing.
Thank you.
For your lateness today.
Thank you.
Yeah. We, now, Mr. Banara, sir, on behalf of Parliament and the legal services, you have heard what the ministry is saying. We are not taking up the discussion with amongst ourselves tomorrow because we want to give you an opportunity to go through whatever the ministry is presenting and some of the things that he is putting in front of us, and we'll work out the legal advice on behalf of Parliament and for the portfolio committee so that you could be able to debate amongst ourselves in a more sober way of what we are going to be doing. We will inform honorable members. We will be working on the workshop. I don't think the workshop is next week. If the only thing that the ministry is promising next week would be after she has finished within her arrangements, she would be then bringing the members the names of people who might sit on the committee. So if there's anything that you're doing next week, and I then alert you that there's a discussion that should take place, I'd really persuade you to come to that particular meeting so that I don't hear you issuing a statement contradicting the portfolio committee and the ministry. And in the meantime, you were not part of that particular consultation. But we'll make sure that everybody knows about the meeting itself, as we always do. Mandy is very good at that one. Deputy Minister, you know we like you very much. We don't want you to lose you, so we'd want to hear to you, from you now, what happened. Come and sit here.
I guess when the chair is himself unable to protect the business of the meeting. There isn't much we can do. The agenda of the meeting has been successfully exhausted. Yes. No. Minister and committee members, what has been reported about the landing of the Deputy President's plane in Badolite in the north of the DRC in the media is by and large an accurate account of what happened. In law, they would say mutatis mutandis, with a slight alteration of details depending on which newspaper you read. But the story is to a large extent, you know, accurate. The Deputy President's plane on its way to Libya, to Tripoli, was meant to refuel on its way up and back in Bangui, in Central African Republic. And that's what happened on its way to Tripoli. It made a stopover in Bangui, it refilled and proceeded to Tripoli on its way back. Unfortunately, when it was supposed to land again in Bangui for refilling, because it was 3:30 in the morning, and the airport of Bangui, it's very close to a very big river, so there was fog, they say low cloud. Much as the control tower allowed, you know, the plane to come in and land, after 3 attempts, it was clear that it was not possible to land because of that heavy fog. The pilot could not see the runaway within the distance that is normally accepted to, you know, to go down. So after 3 attempts, the pilot had to divert to the first alternative refueling airport according to the flight plan. It's something that is in the plan. And the plane was then directed to Badolite. Now, Badolite is not—it's not in Central African Republic. It is in the DRC, and it's about 30 minutes, 25 give and take, plus minus, you know, a flight from Bangui to that airport. This happens at 3:30 at night. It is clear that as the airport in Bangui instructed the pilot to proceed to go and refuel at this airport in the DRC, they did not have the accurate information about the conditions and the state of affairs there. Because, firstly, you know, the airport has been, you know, in ruins for a very long time since it was attacked by the Jean Bembe, you know, rebels when Mabuto was ousted. And as a result, the airport did not have, you know, there were no lights, not only on the runways of the airport, but not even the buildings had light, but there's no control tower. So the pilot had to search for the airport, search for the runway and land. And that, of course, you could not do again from one attempt. There are two attempted twice, and on the third time he landed. Of course, it's an experience that we would not want the deputy president of the country to be exposed to, planes attempting to land as many times as I've just indicated, because, you know, when a plane is, we are told it's landing, and just when you expect the wheels to hit the tarmac, and then it again spools up, and it does that thrice, it's not a comfortable experience. And the whole maneuvers that the pilot had to make to find and eventually locate the runway in the middle of the night was not a good experience. And also because, as it is indicated in the newspapers, the pilot was not sure of the length of the runway when he landed. The landing was such that it was a bit, harsh for the tires of the plane, and one of them, burst. That report is accurate. In Badolite, the airport, as I said, has been, deserted for a very long time. So there was no fuel in Badolite. Not only the airport, even in town, there was no fuel. So the report also is accurate that fuel had to be brought in for the plane to refill. So that is what happened. But, the question that was raised at the press conference last week when we had this conference of the reserve forces is that what do we do going forward to avoid this kind of an exposure to the security of the deputy president? Well, first question is the information provided, where it was sourced in working out the flight plan, meaning that the plane will refuel at this place. If this airport is not there, it is not possible to refuel here, this will be the fallback, airport. All of that information, it's information that is sourced from standard, authorities that provide these information about airports and facilities. So there's much that we could do, I would imagine our pilots could do about it in planning their flight, the flight. If the information from the DRC about that airport is not updated in whatever authorities controlling information around these facilities, around these airports. But from our side, of course, the point, Minister, that I hinted at that press conference was that the Air Force has raised, not now, before, that it is not, from a tactical point, an appropriate or a proper situation for us to have only one distant VIP airplane available to serve the presidency, the inquiry. They're very clear that situation is undesirable and something must be done about it. As the minister commented, it's a matter which, of course, it's not going to be easy to resolve. The finances are involved. We are already squeezed. But the Air Force has long made the point that the present situation we have is untenable. That's what I can say. Thank you very much.
Yeah. That's fine. You really want to ask questions on this one?
No.
Or let's take it as a report. Can
we must thank our pilots, those who piloted those planes, that they were extremely very good. And we want to congratulate them for having landed safely under such conditions.
Okay, thanks. Do you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. I would certainly associate myself with the Honourable Member's comment. I've got three questions. The first is, if I understood the newspaper report correctly, this was a DC-9 aircraft which was not part of this Squadron 21 and was presumably chartered for the purposes of the flight and was then indeed piloted by a reserve force pilot. Why in this case was the business, the BBJ, the president's Boeing, not used? Was it for reasons of economy, or was it for was the plane on another mission? That's the first question. The second is your statement at the Reserve Force conference that perhaps we need to look at acquiring more long-haul planes seems to me to be in stark contradiction to at least the President's intimation that, I mean, we should be looking at flying on commercial airlines. The President took a domestic flight some months ago on a commercial airline. I mean, it seems that your proposal or your thinking is in stark contrast to the President's, and I'd like your comment on that. And the third is, I mean, when looking at alternatives, I mean, is the alternative, rather than purchasing a new long-haul aircraft, is the alternative not, in fact, to fly commercial airlines? That's really the sharp question. Thank you.
Minister, I want to take a question.
Okay. No, maybe the first question about why the BBJ, the President's inquiry, could not be used by the Deputy President to Tripoli, I don't have the information about the deployment of that particular aircraft on that on those days. But clearly the President has his own schedule. I mean, this schedule can't wait because the Deputy President is using his plane to Tripoli. That's just my assumption. But the point about the usage of commercial flights. Well, we, as the Defense Force, one of our responsibilities as mandate is to provide air transport to the Presidency and other VIPs that are stipulated. It's our function. What the President's sentiments are and what he prefers to have done, he's not saying policy. Policy is what we are telling you now. Our responsibility is to provide air transport to the Presidency. Well, the sentiment, of course, that the President has you know, expressed with respect to this matter, I think it's a very positive sentiment, but we will be the first to disagree with the President with respect to wanting us to do things that are unconventional, that are putting the authority of the state in this country to risk. We'll be the first to say no. We'll disagree with the President. Well, that's his sentiment. He has expressed this.
Thanks, sir. We received notification from the Deputy President's office on the 27th of last month that he would be flying to Tripoli on the 30th. On the same day, the President was out of the country in Zimbabwe dealing with a matter of the new settlements in the government. And Inkwazi requires something like 24 hours of resurfacing before it flies out. So it was quite clear that as the President comes in, the Deputy President would be flying to Tripoli, where we needed to attend an important conference there. So the only available flight that we could take for that stretch was a DC-9, which is from our reserve force. And this is the arrangement that we have. Now, you are asking us about the possibility of alternative flights. To get to Tripoli from South Africa, you would need to fly either to Italy or France or something out of the continent, then to fly to Tripoli and vice versa. It takes something in the region of 3 to 4 days. That is a deputy head of state away from government for 3 to 4 days at a time when the President himself has his hands full. I don't think that when you weigh the options, that is the kind of situation we'd like to find ourselves in. On a different note, the safety of some of the flights in Africa is not the kind of safety we would like to expose our leadership to. Thank you.
Yes, I'll give you the last question.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just some
questions about the planning of the flight, which made me very uneasy. First of all, why was Bonjoui suggested as a stopover, where it does not have the same facilities as other destinations which are more or less in that neighborhood? I think of Entebbe, perhaps. Secondly, why Badalita was chosen as an alternative? It seems to me that there would have been other alternatives in the region, and that one is a particularly bad one, as you've detailed. The risks involved were great. Considering also that only months before it had been in the hands of Bemba's rebels. There is a story, and perhaps you can confirm it for us or otherwise, that, in fact, from what you've said, it seems to bear it out, that air traffic control in Bangui was seriously lacking, in that the aircraft was told that it could land with no problem, and obviously it got there and it couldn't. What is being done about that? I mean, are we protesting formally about that? Has that destination now been taken off our options for similar flights in the future? And lastly, I have a problem with the way that this whole thing has been presented, in that when the report initially came out, it was very much downplayed, and we were not informed of the dangers that have now become apparent. And I think this is important, because to have the deputy head of state put in harm's way like this is obviously not a good thing. And if we don't interrogate what went wrong, there's a risk of a similar thing happening again.
When the reports first came out, we had not investigated the matter. The Air Force has since investigated the matter, and they have now given us an authoritative response to all of these matters. And that is why it is possible for us to discuss it now. It would have been extremely irresponsible for us to come out here without the facts that we have now about exactly what went wrong. Why did we not take inquiry, for instance? What flight did we use? Why did we take the routes that we used? We are now quite certain what went wrong, and we are attending to some of those matters. It was not the intention of government to mislead. We needed to be sure of what we're talking about. The second matter, I think the deputy minister will talk about why we chose Bangui. That is the route that we fly when we go to Tripoli. And it is the shortest route. If you look on your map, it's a very straight route up to Tripoli. Kinshasa is way out west. And that is not the route that was used on the way to Tripoli. We used the Central Republic on our way up there all the time. We did not foresee at this particular time that the fog would be what it is. And this happens to aircraft all the time. I don't know how many times we are diverted from Cape Town to George or whatever, depending on bad weather. It's not something you predict. And that is why we went to Bandolite, which is 35 minutes away from where we were. Purely a matter that could happen to any aircraft. It happens to South African Airways all the time. Thank you.
I think that's fantastic. Yeah. Can I give you Dr. Tolo as the last person, please?
Yeah. Thanks very much, Commissioner. You know, I saw in newspaper, well, I know when the president come, you'll find the army outside there. But in newspaper, I saw army, group of army, they are going up and down. I'm not sure if there's something wrong inside or what. Because it was like, I'm talking about as an individual, it was like maybe this thing of hijacking and all of this. Because I saw army in the newspaper, went outside. I'm not sure what went wrong on that time inside.
You know about that? Come on. Minister.
I did not see the newspaper thing that you're talking about. But I do know that we landed in territory that was under the control of the United Nations. And we were unannounced. And it was standard procedure that they would want to check the aircraft. We would do it ourselves. If anybody landed here unannounced, we would want to check the aircraft. Thank you.
What do you want? One question. Okay. Okay, fine.
Thank you, Chair. Arising out of the response from the Minister and the Deputy Minister, it seems that the objection to commercial aircraft are firstly that there may be inefficient use of time, and I'm not sure that I accept that argument on the north-south routes, but I do accept that there is an argument to be made in respect of some routes. But what's more intriguing is the suggestion that flying commercial airlines, particularly SAA, I mean, the intimation is that if the head of state or the deputy head of state flew on a commercial airline such as SAA, that there may be a risk in flying a commercial airline, or indeed a safety risk. I mean, that. I hope that's not what the minister is suggesting.
Okay.
May I quickly discuss this? I said some of the routes in Africa, the safety of the airlines in some of the routes in Africa. I was not talking about SAA. We cannot take SAA out of the routes that it flies, and it does not fly to Tripoli. It does not fly to Central African Republic. It does not fly to Bandolite. It does not fly to any of these routes. We've had to cut down in SAA because of the expense of flying. So we have a serious communication problem in Africa. There are no direct flights to most of these. So for us to get to Africa, we have to get outside of Africa to get into Africa. But also internally in Africa, we are concerned about the safety of flights there. And this is why we would prefer to fly our own president.
Mm. Yeah. Let's thank the ministry again for being very, you know, and the deputy minister for being able to take this last, to give us this information lastly that really has proven that it's quite valuable. Minister, can you really thank you with the Deputy Minister and everybody?
Thank you.
Honorable members,
yes.
Thank you for coming. We'll see you again. And media also and everybody. Thank you.
PGM.
Thank you, PMG.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to close it and then Lord Davis and the opposition.